The Lock-In Podcast is brought to you by Rotocloud, the all-in-one solution for managing hospitality teams. Rotocloud lets you plan and share rotas, record attendance, and manage your team's annual leave, all in less time than it takes to make a brew. It also makes life easier for your staff, allowing them to check their rotas, request annual leave, and even pick up extra shifts, all through the Rotocloud mobile app. Start your 30-day free trial today by visiting rotocloud.com/lock-in. Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Lock-In Podcast. We're recording this episode in the wake of the announcement by our beloved Prime Minister of the roadmap for reopening. So I suspect there'll be a fair amount of swearing in this episode. You have been warned. Once again, I'm with my co-host for this podcast, James Cuthbertson and Heath Ball. Clearly, the announcement of pubs reopening, albeit under less than ideal conditions, is broadly welcome. Although James and Heath look a little glum at the news, I can only assume that means you're basically now going to have to do some work, guys. So the holiday's over, is that?
It's been an amazing holiday.
Yeah. You've just put your feet up, haven't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Heath, I mean, you've just sat there.
I've done nothing for the last year. So, yeah, this is going to be fun.
I mean, it's going to be a bit of a real crunch, change of gears to actually get back in and do all this then. So we're going to be looking at the roadmap, and we'll be digging into that throughout this podcast and what the slow reopening of the sector is going to mean for operators. We'll also be having a chat with insurance specialist Stephen Swift when Heath has stopped banging around in the background there. Do you want to keep going, Heath? Is that...
No, it's kitchen border.
Carry on. I see, fair enough. We are actually recording it live in a pub, so we'll let him off. We'll be having a chat with insurance specialist Stephen Swift to take a look at some of the ongoing frustrations around business interruption too. So, Heath, James, let's get the swearing out of the way. I bet you're delighted with the news announced last night.
Go, Heath.
No, because there's words I'd like to use that don't really are appropriate. But
use all your words.
Yeah.
Use all your words.
What a fucking... He's a fucking joke, isn't he? Seriously, if he'd done this a year ago, we'd be open and trading right now. And now he waits to the last minute to go, right, we're going to lock everything down. We're going to do a slow, drawn-out process. We're going to take our time. He's shite. What a waste of fucking... What? 3 more months are closed. And everybody's going, woohoo! Pubs are going to open in 3 months. Three months.
I think that's been lost, hasn't it?
Up tables.
I think people, all they've heard is pubs are going to be open. They've got all excited and then completely missed the fact that isn't going to happen for quite some time yet.
But also, when you've got the budget that's so close as well, and they keep saying there'll be some measures in there to help, it's a week away. Why not wait a week? We've waited this long. And go through a series of, like, let's have an afternoon where we'll cover different angles of the world, you know, what's going on.
James, they need to leak it to the press first.
I know,
they need
don't.
To spend a week of drip feeding it to us, you know, get public opinion, you know, see what's going on, and then they'll make up their mind on the day of the budget.
But in some ways, that's the problem, isn't it? But by the time Boris was on at 7 o'clock last night, we heard it all, so it was pointless. You only got to see his ridiculous hair. So I think, for me, if they could have just said, like, why don't they just be honest and say, right, hospitality, you're going to be screwed for another 3 months because, but we've got this for you here. Those that take dividends, your business will slowly open, but you'll get fuck all between now and then. And you gradually go through them and tell them where it is. And I think that's what I object to it, because at least then you know where you are. And
but how many operators have been thinking they're opening in March? I know some people who think, oh, we're going to open in March, and they've been living on gas fumes to get. They're going to, you know, they're running out of petrol, and then now suddenly, oh, it's May. Oh, so what are we going to see? You know, in the coming weeks, how many businesses are going to fold?
But Heath, once again, you know? this thing about, like, not being able to trade, you know, sell alcohol to takeaway still, and having, you know, thinking that this is a magic wand, this whole outside space, and they realise how that, A, you've either not got a pub garden, or opening as a garden on its own is just not viable. So once again, it shows how little influence we have at the top table, because it's another bullshit decision that shows absolutely no understanding of our trade. Honestly, it's the biggest failure, is we all have these lovely, you know, and with respect, we're very good in the trade at saying all the problems we've got, but we don't get it properly where the decision, the corridors of power, don't understand, or they don't care.
Right. Yeah, no, I think
they don't care.
I don't think they care.
We've
either sort of shot our bolt too early. We got to the ear at the beginning, then we had far too many shrill voices probably within the sector. I won't point your fingers, but I'm sure we can talk about one or two of those.
Mm.
But they have not helped, because it's just become a constant barrage of noise, whereas if we'd left it to the people whose jobs it were, it might have been a bit better. That said, I mean, we aren't being listened to. They don't want to. I mean, the takeaway alcohol is a case in point, isn't it? Because, you know, you're going to be able to meet up with people. People are going to be going out and sitting in parks. They're going to be getting tins from their local Tesco and having a drink with them. You know, why couldn't it be a shot in the arm for wet lead pubs and pubs generally to be allowed to go, OK, let's let that takeaway happen now, that people are going to be going out, they're going to be sort of meeting up with mates in the park. Why can't they go and get a pint or two from the pub and do that rather than sort of add to Tesco's bottom line? Mm. It's that lack of reason and logic behind it that I think is most irritating. But I mean, we're going to dig into a lot of this. I think, I mean, in fact, the story we were talking about earlier, the article by, was it Jeremy King? The fact that he was sort of saying, you know, that we were promised that the original lockdown was to reduce the R number, to let the NHS come back to. I mean, that's right, that's gone right down now.
And not even talking about the R number.
And nobody's talking about that. Mm. And they've forgotten about that. They've forgotten about that as a carrot that they dangled. You know, we've seen hospitality people, when they were open, operating very safely. We can be part of that solution. Mm. Yet it's just not happening, is it?
Yeah, no, I thought last night, and people have said it was a different mood to that press conference last night, where even the scientists appeared to believe what they were saying and not feel slightly embarrassed about the position they're in. But to drop the R number, I mean, we are being treated like absolute idiots, aren't we? I mean, that's the bottom line of it, because there's been so much on that all year. It's all we've talked about, and how it can't be one of the four measures. I mean, they must be laughing. It's the Emperor's new clothes. They must think all nuts.
We're going to dive into some of this, but I mean, the interesting thing is, I mean, we say we're not being listened to, but I mean, that's not strictly true, is it, this week? Because we did see Rishi Sunak take some time out from his very busy schedule.
Oh my God, not Gordon Ramsay.
To speak to a captain of hospitality, Gordon Ramsay.
That was pathetic.
To really dig into the problems of the. I couldn't get past the intro. I couldn't get past the intro. It made me want to.
He sacked all his staff at the beginning. He sacked all his staff, and he sat there telling us he does these Zoom meetings with his young team and his checks on their welfare. What a prick. What an absolute prick.
May have to run this one past the lawyers, but it was a joke, and it shows how out of touch the government is, that their idea of speaking to a hospitality sector is speaking to a celebrity chef about his latest game show.
Mm.
I mean, it's a nonsense.
It's nonsense. Yeah, it is a nonsense.
Absolutely.
But they're nonsense. Not really interested. Well, that's, I don't know, but the problem you've got is you've got people in this industry that come out the end of this and they don't care. I'm talking about our industry. For benevolent as we are and caring, there just comes a point where you're just kicked in the what's it so many times, you just lose respect for it. And I think we are so regulated, and we so uphold the law in so many things we do, then you couldn't blame a bit of lawlessness. Mm. You couldn't blame people who said, oh, bollocks to it, we'll do as we want, because that's the sort of lack of respect we've been shown, really.
Well, I think we shall crack on and talk about some of these issues shortly. Listening to the Lock In podcast, and we are talking about the opening roadmap. I mean, what can we say about it, guys? You know, what does it? How viable is it? What's your reaction? I mean, we're basically talking 3 months till fully not even fully reopened, really, aren't we?
No, it's just it's just more debt and more failures.
I mean, is it viable? Are we going? Can you guys?
Well, we can open it, but again, but doing delivery has only been a case of losing less, not about making money, really. I mean, it's just, you know, it shows that naivety to think that you can just open gardens. And, you know, then you have people that And we know we hate customers anyway, but you know, you're going to have a garden for, think about the amount of people that will be booking a garden, then it rains, and they'll all want to be inside, and they've all had a beer, and now they, oh, it's not fair, Boris, just, oh, it's all right, we can go inside. You can imagine. And it's like, obviously it's lovely, because it doesn't rain down here. Yeah. No. But it's, you know, I think it's going to be very, very poor to manage, very difficult to manage. And it's broadly unfair. But again, that's what I was saying. If you're going to announce some easing for the and some grants, then, you know, are you then handling, at what point does the grant reflect the ability of the licensee to, you know, to turn a buck? You know, licensee, big garden covered, you've got a chance. But does everyone get the same money? Does everyone get the same grant? Or is there no grant? That's the problem. It's like they like walk into a room, throw a fucking hand grenade in there, then walk away, rather than announcing what's going to go on and saying, by the way, we're doing this. Mm. And this causes the sort of ifs and buts, along with when they put the leaks out to people to tell them they're actually going to do it, just creates a lot of negativity. Mm. So it's the inconsistency of it all again. So I don't know.
I mean, what's your thoughts, Heath? I mean, you guys are fortunate in the sense you do have, well, you've got a mix of pubs, and we'll maybe look at those in a bit more detail in a minute. But I mean, for guys who have no outdoor space, I mean, can they hang on?
Well, they get grants and they get looked after, but I just don't think the grants reflect the level of, you know, damage they're sustaining. So can they hang on? Like, I think a lot of operators were hoping it would be March or early April, they'd have Easter, they were counting on that, and then we're looking at what, the 12th of April, if you've got an outside space, how viable is that, depends how big you've got, what's the weather going to do, do you know, what happens if it rains, there's so many factors, and it's just like, and then what, you hold off to the 17th of May, and you've still got restrictions, which I believe is tier one restrictions, but then you've got, then everyone, what I'm seeing on social is like, a lot of all the latest sort of culture is like the 21st of June, we're going to smash it up. There's no more rules. Mm-hmm. Now, if we're going to open on the 17th, they're still going to announce on the 10th of May whether we can open on the 17th inside.
Yeah.
So, if, you know, it's just like what we're finding at the Highgate side is the phone won't stop and the emails won't stop. And we want tables, we want a book, we hear you can open. It's not even confirmed for the 12th. Mm. That's just like the earliest. So you're dealing with people going, oh, you don't want to open, why don't you want to open? And you're having these, not only got the stress of trying to hobble through, potentially if you open on the 12th or if you open in April, but you've got all the stress now of customers, you know, on your case because they want tables. So it's just like, you don't want to get angry.
But these customers though, you've got to laugh on social days. Have you thought about putting, you know, these sort of comments, they start like that and you think, I thought fuck all else for a year. And you're sitting there on your furlough, with your pension still getting racked up, and you're thinking, have you thought about chairs outside?
I did see that.
Yeah.
I saw your response, which I thought was remarkably restrained.
Yeah,
I can hear the steam coming out.
We suffer from the same thing as the way the government look at us. Customers think we're simple. They think, oh, yeah. And the amount of people go, you know what you should do? How many people over the last year have got ideas for me? It's just like, I know generally they're trying to help, but it's really sweet. Fuck off. Leave me alone. Yeah. I know what I'm doing. I don't need some geek who works in IT telling me how to run a pub. This is what I do. This is what I spent my life doing. Piss off. And they're all there. They've all got these amazing suggestions. Leave me alone. I don't need your help. Come here and spend money. That's how you help. Buy a takeaway. Don't sit there with... And you've got to sit there and humour them, and you're like, oh, my God. And it's the same thing. The government think we're simple in the head. This is why they're taking advantage of us, and they're running us into the ground, and they really don't care. You know, furlough, how many companies are holding on just on furlough? Mm. You know, it's just going to pop. It's going to be a blood fight.
Inside, he's like taking it all in with people, but inside he's thinking, where am I going to put their body? And he's thinking about like those big roundabouts that you have, you know, on dual carriageways where they kind of get left. He's thinking, there's the place, right there. He's got it all mapped out.
I've got a question here. Did Sophie turn up at the weekend?
No,
that's didn't. Disappointing.
No.
So, I mean, Heath had an email from somebody saying she wanted to ride her bike to his pub from South London, which, again, is exceptionally ignorant of the rules of staying local.
And it's uphill.
And it's uphill because it's going up north, that's right. Yeah, good point. And asking if he was serving food and she could eat in his pub. which was particularly impressive. When you pointed out that no, but she can have a takeaway, she then said that she was looking forward to having a takeaway frozen margarita as well.
It's got to be a mate.
I mean, it's got to be a wind up, particularly if she didn't turn up. I think it's like,
no, look, unless my mates have gone to the trouble of setting up an Instagram account of a 40 something lonely woman who likes cycling and cats.
I can get in that head quite quick.
I was going to say, I can name at least three of your friends that have probably been planning this for about 6 months. So
it's that level. Like, you know what's going to happen? The sun's going to come out. People can meet their friends in the parks, and they're going to walk along and they go, "Oh, let's go and get some drinks at the pub, and we'll go into the park." Nah, not happening. Mm. Do you know what I mean? So,
They'll go to the supermarket and get their drinks and sit in the park. Then the Daily Mail will blame pubs for people drinking in the park.
So. But they had a chance to get this right, didn't they? They had a chance to get this right now and listen. But again, it proves my point that they don't listen.
No.
Or care.
And they don't care, James. They do not care. Let's just work on that. Mm. Everyone on Twitter's there raging away. Oh, yeah, this coming in. Like, no. Like, you know what I mean? And then we get these little peace stories. Oh, it's just, it's
think out.
Then we get Gordon Ramsay.
Think how gutted you must be if you're like heading up one of the associations or you're Jonathan Downey, to think you've wasted all that energy and achieved very little. Must be quite devastating, really. As devastating it is for the trade who are at the end of it.
It's heartbreaking across the piece, isn't it? I mean, let's look at definitely sidestepping that issue now. let's have a look at your pubs and. You know, what are you going to do? You've got four sites. What's the plan under this roadmap? Are you going to open any of them?
We have no outside areas to speak of. So unless you can magic an outside area and push things through licensing,
you can put some seats outside.
Yeah, but
the
like six,
cat.
Six seats to fire. People appreciate how much it costs to fire a site up, and you know. What do you want, a week of rain?
I've got a question, though, because we could, you know, the Wenlock, we're right next to that park.
That park, yeah.
Mm. I suppose we need to speak to, get onto Papa's Allen's and have a conversation with them, but can we just do takeaways and then we'll go and sit in the park?
You can't do takeaway, can you?
Well, you will, yeah, you can from the top, of April. But, I mean, this is where you need to, and I would say to all operators, you know, look at any available space around your sites that you can co-opt or, you know, even steal, beg, borrow, whether it's sort of another operation. I mean, you've got a courtyard next to the lock car that's got no real use other than people occasionally parking their car on it. I mean, why not see if you could borrow that?
Yeah, we're talking to about it, yeah.
So, I mean, it's those kind of things. So, I mean, so basically, to look at your sites then, so Wenlock, you need to look into it. The Anchor Tap, you can put some tables outside, as James has said, six seats outside.
6 seats.
What about the Lockhart and the Red? What are you going to do?
Yeah, we'll open those, eh?
I mean, you've not got a massive amount of outdoor space at Lockhart. How many covers?
36.
36, okay.
That's a capacity, though. You're basically saying you only can come here with five mates. We can't have you and John sitting there all afternoon drinking best bitter.
Damn it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Red, we're fortunate. We've got two gardens. One's currently under marquee, like the Lockhart, which sits about 80. And then we've got the back garden, which sits 30, which isn't undercover.
So here's a question for you, though, Heath. To get to that back garden, they've got to walk through the pub.
Yeah, what do you go for a piss? You're going to get.
Yeah, but from the guidance.
Not necessarily.
Edward.
Sorry, go on.
The stuff I've read that you can walk through a venue to get to the. It's not. You've got to be able to use the toilets.
Well, yeah.
You can't tell me, like, you can't say to customers, okay, come in here and have lunch, but you can't use our toilets.
Yeah.
No, if they bring that in, then they might just piss off.
I wouldn't. Yeah, well, that's it. Yeah, or in the plant pot outside. I mean, I wouldn't put it past them, to be honest. But
but what if it does? What happens if it rains? Then everybody wants to come inside. You know,
well, they can't.
Front garden's covered, the back garden's not.
You imagine that you've just been served your dinner. You just sit down for your lunch, and then you're chasing for a bill you're never going to get. It's nonsense.
Your dinner,
but
there's
also the thing here at the Red Lion. The back garden's licensed to 10 o'clock. The front garden's licensed till 11 o'clock. So if you book a table in the back garden, be aware you've got to finish it. You've got to be out of here. Because generally in the past, we'd hold your table inside and you'd move inside for the last hour. You know? So you've got different licensing aspects as well. You know? So it's you know, it's kind of, but I think the reality is, I think if we can get, I think the way we should approach it is like, if we can get as much going as we can, they're going to have to speed up the 17th of May. If they're basically the whole country, all the pubs, you know, we've got 40% of the country's pubs open, it's going to be, you know, festival time anyway. I think the government can't wait another month to hold back. I think we just need to get stuff open and then just force their hand even more.
I mean, how are you going to manage that process? I mean, you've already said that you've got people ringing up the moment this announcement was made. Your phone started ringing with the customers trying to book. I mean, how are you managing that? Because you don't know for definite. And I know, James, I saw you put something on social media basically telling people to back the fuck off. I think was reading between the lines. Mm-hmm. And you weren't going to be taking any bookings. So is that how you're going to do it? You're just not going to take bookings?
Well,
at the moment?
I think all those that started celebrating last night and saying we're open, I you know, if they learnt nothing in the last year, 7 weeks away and a lot can change. And if you're that insecure that you're trying to grab bookings from everywhere, it's going to be busy. That's the one thing you know. But why give yourself the headache of taking all the bookings only to cancel them if the world turns upside down again? We've got 7 weeks to sort it out. There's no need to rush. And we've also got to get our heads around this. You know, do we know about 2 metre rules? Is it track and trace? You know, what's the staffing level going to be? You've only got a couple of weeks of furlough left after that initial opening, so you're going to have to just lose the rest of your staff, because you're not going to, if you just got your outside space, you won't need your full complement of people. There's so much, and as always with these things, they're announced half-cocked. There's more questions than answers.
Yeah.
So until you really, we didn't think there was any point in rushing in to a fanfare when we have 7 weeks, and we'll do it once and we'll do it properly, once we're in possession of all the information. Last night was just, it was a bit of a shit show out there, really.
There's no detail, is there? No. Even my guys are pushing the Cabinet Office and Bayes for as much information, and it's like getting blood out of the stone.
But also, if you take our Lockhart here, and we've got, you know, 36 covers out the front, but what if they say it's a 2 metre rule, not a 1 metre rule? That affects the capacity. But I've actually already sold out. So now I'm phoning, you know, half the people back to say, I know we booked, and I know you've got all your mates coming, but you're not coming. Yeah. That's, why would you put yourself in that situation? I mean, I don't blame anyone for being keen and, you know, frankly, desperate. We all are. But if we've learned something, if we learned nothing at all, we know that things can change, and we'll get clarification as time goes on.
No one's ever said you're desperate, James.
No.
No. Okay, well, we will dig into some of that again down the line, but for the moment, let's move on. You're listening to the Lock-In Podcast with myself, Heath Ball, and James Cuthbertson, and we have, I'd like to welcome today, Stephen Swift from Sector Associates. Stephen, you're an insurance specialist, that's right?
Allegedly, yes. Thanks
for
having us,
guys.
We'll be the judge of that in a minute.
Yeah, we'll be the judge of that. Now, I mean, who'd have thought insurance would be such an interesting topic as well? I mean, when you signed up
to it...
We'll
also be the judge of that in a minute.
I mean, how are things with you at the moment? What's we'll get into what's dominating your day, but, how is the insurance going?
Well, it's certainly dominated my life for the last year. Nobody's ever spoke to me about pandemic insurance cover in 25 years in the industry, and yet it's all we've dealt with for the last year.
But they wish they had.
But I think at the moment, it's just really, really frustrating. We've got less than 10% of policyholders have got cover, or have policies which have been affected by the court case, and the ones that do have cover, the insurers are really dragging their heels and getting any sort of payment out. It's any shred of credibility we've got as an industry is seriously under threat at the moment, in my opinion.
So, yeah, I guess, I mean, from your point of view, there's a reputational issue at stake here, isn't there? Because, I mean, you're not a broker, so you're kind of caught in the middle to a certain extent. But, you know, I mean, are you finding that it's making it much more difficult for you to do business because that tarnish to the reputation?
I think people will accept insurance has been around for hundreds of years, will continue to do so. And it was only a year ago I was living up at York, and a lot of places were underwater, as they are every few years in York, and insurance companies will step in. So we'll continue to have floods. People will slip and trip. There'll be car accidents, and insurance companies will step in. But for the last year, I think from a PR perspective, declining the claim, being taken to court, losing the appeal, I think it's a really difficult time at the moment, and we've got to build some bridges.
I mean, Heath, you are one of those few people that did actually take out pandemic insurance. I mean, do you want to sort of give Stephen a sort of outline of your experience?
Yeah, so I was insured. I had they approached me and said, right, you've got a claim. Fill out all these forms. Filled out the forms. Came back, said we need more information. Got my accountant to compile all the information. Now we traded during lockdown. We did takeaways, etc. Gave them all the turnover. You know, management accounts, all that, like so much information.
Cost a lot of money too.
My accountant to compile it, you know what I mean? It took a while. Submitted it all. They turn around and they've done their maths. And they said, we've done the maths. You've actually broken even. So we don't owe you anything. And I'm like, what do you mean I've broken even? I'm massively out. But they counted furlough payments as income, any grants or anything as income. And they said, well, you've got all that, so we don't owe you anything. Job on. So I went back again. I said, no, this isn't fair. This isn't right. Give me a moment. You know, you haven't taken into account my income because my dividends, I know we don't count that. Kept on going back and back, and it's just been like that. And then I said, right, this is just ridiculous. I know that I don't agree with you, so I'm going to sue you. And they went, do what you want. Then I was in the process of doing that. I spoke to my lawyer. He's getting ready to go, letter of intent, all that. Then my broker, like obviously your job, he stepped in and said, what's going on? I said, this is what's going on. He goes, leave it with me. I'll come back. That's where I'm at now. Leave it with me because I've got a lot of other clients who are in the same boat as you, who are refusing to pay, and we'll leave it with me and we'll try and sort it out. So I'm waiting on him. If not, my lawyers, you know, I don't care how much money I throw at it because I'm just so pissed off at them. It's so unfair.
So your view of insurance, Heath? Your view of insurance in the meantime?
Not with that same company, but with the same broker. I've renewed my insurance, yeah.
Yeah, and what's your view, though, on insurance?
The only reason I have it is for chips and falls if some customer fell over. There's no point having it. It's a waste of money. Because when you need it, they're not there for you. What's the point? I'd be better off banking all that money, all that years, and having it in the bank account and going, oh, I've got a few quid in the bank. And like, yeah. I'm not, you know, I just, sharks, not happy at all. Just can't be bothered.
Oh, yeah. Is that a typical kind of complaint that you're hearing, Stephen?
Well, most of the clients haven't got any cover, and there was a lot of media coverage when the Supreme Judgment came out. And you would think if you were watching Sky News or BBC News that day that everybody was going to get paid.
Bloody
and that
journalist.
Has some implications. You know, we had a lot of clients who landlords wanted them straight away for payment because they'd seen the news and they said, oh, you're going to get paid. And that wasn't the case. So there were some problems with that. But I think for the clients that are due to get paid, the insurance companies aren't moving quickly enough. And I spoke to somebody on Friday, and it was a tipping point for me, and she said, I'd logged the claim 2 weeks ago. They haven't even got to the point of asking for financial information yet. And it was a case of, we'll review it, we'll be in touch in two or three weeks. And it was that blasé two or three weeks that... and I'll say, well, that's 5 weeks from logging the claim. Mm. We're 4 weeks on from the Supreme Court judgment. I don't accept that people say we've got lots of claims to handle. You knew this was coming. Mm. You should have had, in fact, you've had longer than normal to prepare for this. You should have had your systems and everything in place. And for the likes of yourself, Heath, where you have got cover, insurance companies should be knocking on your door. Mm. Trying to give you as much as they can under the policy.
Here's the rub with mine. My policy's capped at 25 grand anyway. So it's not, you know, it's not a life-changing amount of money, but it's 25 grand that I would kill for right now because that just helps with everything. Mm. So it's not like they're going to pay me 150, 200, 300 million pounds. It's only 25 grand.
You can't help
it. Stop being horrible.
But you can't help but think that they're kind of playing a waiting game because every day goes by, we're losing businesses, you know, and then the claim itself and the big picture becomes fewer. I mean, that's how it feels anyway.
Is that a sense that you're getting, Stephen, that there's an element of they're playing this waiting game in the hopes that some of these claims will drop away through business failure?
I don't know. I think an interesting stat would be how many businesses that have gone under in the last year wouldn't have gone under had they have had a valid claim made.
Mm. Yeah.
And where does that leave those people? You know, are you going to go back and sue the insurance company? I don't know. But I think there's a lot of work to do there.
I think a lot of people are just going to walk away, aren't they? I mean, it's the last thing you're going to be thinking about. You know, your business is in tatters.
They're now looking at reopening. So if they can hold on for another 3 months, then it will just be business as usual. And I don't think the licensees, as a rule, are great at admin. You know, some of the bigger companies are bigger policies.
I couldn't possibly comment on that.
But you fly straight into the muck and bullets of running a pub again. So this is actually your only time to get it. And I don't know, just this lack of urgency does somewhat seem...
Deliberate.
Deliberate.
The other thing is that you need lots of information for business interruption claims because they can go from a single site operator up to a huge pub company. Hmm. So what the insurance companies have done is built portals and done spreadsheets, but they accommodate everyone. So I've just come off the phone with a single site operator down the south, and they've sent me this huge Excel spreadsheet which asks for absolutely everything, and he's got a £25,000 limit under his policy. And you can tell by his turnover and his, anyone with a set of accounts will know that he's triggered the claim. Just pay the guy.
Yeah.
You know, and he said, to be honest with you, he said, I don't even use Excel that well. He said, I've got this huge thing to bloody complete. And I said, I'm not an accountant. Mm. I'm a publican and I need to get back running. And that £25,000 is vital.
And he would then have to pay an accountant to do that for him, which then eats into what little reserves, if any, that he has.
It costs me money to do my account to get it all. It took my account ages to collect all the information they wanted. It wasn't just one file. It was like previous trading history over the last 5 years. You know, there was a lot of paperwork.
Yeah.
And they looked at it and went, oh, no, you've had furlough payments. And like, well, hold on.
Is that legitimate? I mean, Tim, you might be able to talk about this, but I mean, is that legitimate? Is that just simply
companies putting... They'll take off the claim because they'll almost have the view, the government have paid that, we're not going to pay that, so you get double dip. They shouldn't touch the grants. Grants should be ring fenced. They were a shot in the arm, and the FCA did write to the insurance companies and say grants shouldn't be included in the claim. Furlough payment should. If you've topped up your furlough, then that would be included within the claim as well. And the cost of accountants, in most policies, you can claim for any claims preparation costs by an accountant, which should be on top of your indemnity limit.
But they wouldn't include dividends either. They said to me, we can't include your dividends. We just, do you know what I mean?
So,
I'm working for bloody, I'm losing money and I'm, working for nothing.
Yeah. And it's not just this. I think we're talking about reopening again. And we're talking about people sitting outside and licensing's cropped up. So I've had some conversations today where sometimes the local councils will say, yes, we'll support you, but you've got to get extra public liability insurance, and then the insurance company might say, well, we'll make a small additional charge for that. So I've got to say, this is ridiculous. You know, if somebody wants to put an extra 5 or 6 chairs and tables outside, we've got to, one, help them with the licensing to get that done quickly, and any extra cost, we've got to waive that. Just get rid of that.
Yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't thought about that, but yeah, I guess with people are going to be looking to expand into any kind of space they can outside, so they need to ensure that they're covered.
But do you also think is there a chance that when people are renewing now, they will look at pandemic insurance, and the insurance companies will offer a nice premium on top of their premium to cover it and still not pay it?
I think we're a way off any form of pandemic cover.
You know, I don't think they're going to do it again, James.
Well, it didn't cost them anything this time. Cost them nothing this time.
Yeah.
The insurance companies will say, look, we know how many slips and trips and falls we've had. We know how many cars have accidents after midnight. We've got hundreds of years of data. We don't have any data on pandemics like COVID. How on earth can we start to price for it? And that's what the insurance companies would say. It becomes almost uninsurable. We've done similar things with terrorism and with floods, so we could come up with a fund or a pot. But I think we're a way off doing that at the moment, just because it's so unknown.
On that basis, you then have to argue about the principle and putting it in there in the first place. Was that really unlawful? If they could never work out and never fill it, was that ever something they should have done? Because if they're saying it's wrong now, then why do they have it? Just to take money?
Now, disease cover originally was, business interruption was about fire, a storm, a flood, your premises are closed. And then some people came to the insurance companies 25 years ago and said, But what happens if it's not properly damaged? What happens if I've got a disease?
Yep.
Food poisoning, Legionella. So the insurance companies changed the policies and said, okay, we'll cover some diseases whilst at the premises. Years move on, and then somebody says, well, what happens if it's not at my premises? What if it's next door? So some policies said, well, we'll cover you for some diseases within the vicinity of the premises. And we'll list all the diseases. Time goes on again, and some insurance companies said, we'll cover you for any disease within the vicinity of the property. And they're the ones that went to court. The whole premise of this originally was stuff happening at your premises for the hospitality sector. That's where the cover was first, you know, designed. That's what it was for.
Okay. I mean, we had an email from one of our listeners, actually, Stephen Winrow, who runs Heaton's Bridge Inn, and he said they had a policy, and they were turned away. They were told they had no claim by their insurer, but they did a policy check with the FSA and found out that that they do, and they were just being fobbed off. I mean, is that something that you've encountered anything of, Steve? Is that?
I've reviewed over 300 policies in the last 6 weeks. And again, it's about 10% that have covered, and I've still got some on the go where the broker hasn't been in touch with them or the insurance company hasn't, and yet the FCA, the regulator, was quite adamant they wanted the insurance companies to identify which customers they had that were affected and write to them. And I think some of the big insurance companies have done that, but there's still clients out there that will have some cover and they need to get it checked. And I don't think the policy checker on the FCA website, you've got to have a little bit of knowledge to go through that. I've used it once or twice, and it's quite complex. But I would urge people to get your policy checked and see whether you've got a chance of a claim. I would resist no win, no fee solicitors, which cropped up all over social media. And and this is where there's distrust of insurance companies that will go to these no win, no fee, and if you've got a claim that's covered, why would you give up 40% of it to a company which is purely just going to send you details in and you'd still be on your own? So I'm not a fan of that sort of approach.
No.
I've been banned off no-win-no-fee websites now.
There's always going to be there's always going to be ambulance chasers out there, aren't there? So keep making a nuisance of yourself on social media, Stephen. That's the going to be the key.
I'll spend my weekends now, Ed.
Good stuff. So, I mean, in summary, what would be your sort of key tips for our listeners who are sort of looking at this insurance problem?
So, get your policy reviewed, speak to your broker, and send it in to us if you want. You don't need to spend a lot of money going and getting that done. Be realistic in terms of expectations. Don't think that everybody is getting paid. There's 370,000 potential policyholders. It's about less than 10%. And there's talk about further legal action. I'm not sure whether that will be forthcoming. It's going to be expensive. It's going to be lengthy. So get your policy looked at now. And also make sure that you review your policy going forward. Make sure you've got your stock levels right, your business interruption. If there's any different activities you're doing, such as delivery or takeaway, make sure that you've got the correct motor cover in place. You can't afford not to be covered on some of the real detail bits, which could cost you. But premiums are generally going up, but a lot of people haven't reviewed their insurance policies for years, and we're still able to make reasonable savings for people. So you get it reviewed and spend a bit of time on it. I think in the past, clients and brokers, particularly you're dealing with busy people in the hospitality trade, you might get them on the phone for 15, 20 minutes. Try and spend a bit more time on it, because it'll be worth it. One, getting the cover right, and two, you can save some cash as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. Heath, are you covered for delivery? Particularly, I'm thinking scooters.
Yes, sir.
Good. Fantastic. Brilliant. Stephen, thank you very much for that. I'm going to have to post that video on the website just to underline why that's a joke. Anyway, thank you very much for that, Stephen. Really appreciate your time now.
Excellent. Yeah, cheers.
Okay. Cheers, Stephen. Thanks.
Thanks. You're listening to the Lock-In Podcast. So we're talking about the reopening, the roadmap to reopening, and a key element as part of that is obviously going to be the customers. And we were just talking off microphone then about consumer behaviour and the fact that people have automatically... I mean, but the frustration, I think what we were saying, the frustration is that the government has said that these... they're going to be data-led rather than date-led, and then gone out and named a load of dates. And they've been very specific. I get that there's a challenge for them. So they're under pressure that they've got to give, you know, a timeline in which it's going to happen. Mm. But because they've been so specific with it, they haven't gone, you know, OK, well, second week in April, we'll consider doing this. It's very much April the 12th. Mm. And because they've been so specific, it's now fixed that in people's minds, hasn't it?
Well, no one heard beyond April the 12th when they said... If all goes well.
Yeah.
No, that was dumb.
Yeah, yeah.
Nothing after April 12th mattered.
No. So now you've got customers ringing off the hook trying to book for that date. You know, they don't understand. They then blame us for, you know, being cautious and not doing it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, well, how do we think? What is... I mean, consumer... You get a sense that maybe consumer confidence is actually quite high.
High,
if
yeah.
they're ringing you like this. I mean, do you think that's fair?
Yeah, I do. I think,
or is consumers, it just you've got a load of alcoholics as customers?
Yeah, maybe B. Yeah. But I think their consumer confidence in some areas will be really high, but there will still be some that, you know, how uneasy is it when you see, is it just me that when you see someone shake hands on telly now, you're like, ooh. And it's become, there's a lot of that kind of slight unease that will stay around for a while. So there'll be a mixture, but yeah, there's certainly no limit. Currently, there's no lack of enthusiasm for people getting back.
Mm. Well, what about you, Heath? What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think, man, like the phone at the Red Line hasn't stopped. Emails, you know, my mobile phone last night, text messages from friends. Everyone is amazing. And you're just saying, well, no, we're not ready yet. We need, like, more clarity. We need to see what's going on. You know, this is not a big state. They don't care. They just want bookings. Or just pencil me in and then, you know, and then if it doesn't happen, I don't, like, I don't want to waste my time.
You have penciled
just
me in.
Leave me alone.
For the 12th?
What's that?
2 o'clock, 12th? You did pencil me in for that, though, didn't you?
No, I didn't. Right. I just ignored you.
Brilliant.
But yeah, I don't like. I think that the government's just lied its way through everything. They've lied about every time. Like everyone's saying that. You can see it in every paper. It's just they lie to suit them. Man, 3 more months of hospitality being closed. Mm. Like I think, you know, you saw the guy from Lyon complaining. You know, how many businesses are going to sustain that?
It was interesting, you know, because the last lockdown. You notice people were... Masks have become commonplace.
Mm.
And we're still not sure quite what masks will be and what that'll... You know, around the reopening, which is kind of our point about being hesitant. But I think this time, with those that we consider to be vulnerable, having had their vaccines, they'll be a lot more relaxed. I think people will be straight back in and on it because the sun's out. You can't get it when the sun's out. We know that.
Today is a lovely sunny day, isn't it? And I must admit, I walked over here and my mood was much brighter. And I think that at the moment that sun is out and, you know, it's the evenings are getting lighter, you know, spirits are lifted generally, aren't they?
But it's going to be a job for us because, again, we're going to be... There'll be no shortage of people making sure that we're doing the right things, and rightly so. But customers need to take their part in that.
Mm.
Well, I think it's going to be back to school teacher time again, I'm afraid.
Well, I mean, how have customers changed at all? Do you think that they're going to be better behaved?
No.
No?
No.
No?
Yeah.
No, I think the opposite.
Really?
I do.
We're going to be angry.
Yeah.
They're going to want their lives back, and they've had enough.
And they've got
they
money.
They want their lives back, and they want to go to the pub, and they want to have a pint. They don't want to be told what to do. Just leave me alone. I'm having a pint with my friend. Don't tell me anything. You watch. There's going to be a lot of aggro.
There's a lot to think about here as well, because we've also got into the, you know, that run of having to have a main meal, you know, maximum of 2 hours, you know, time slots, and, you know, only staying when you're eating. There's been a lot of things that have kind of messed with people's heads about what the norm is.
Mm.
So pubs also need to take some time. This is why I was getting antsy about people making announcements last night. How are you going to run it? That's what we're thinking is, do we do the 2 hour slots? Do you, you know, how do you make that work? Because you've got to make money. And I think that's where people need to understand that it's not a gold rush for us when we come back in. It's trying to put some of the reserves that you had, you know, trying to mend some of the damage, you know, repay some of the loans. It's not just a, you know, it's not a free-for-all. It's not a gold rush.
No, no, and I think it's going to be a difficult thing to manage, isn't it, that sort of customer expectation. I mean, what about, you've got, within Eurosate, you've got, well, the only two that are going to be open, let's be honest about it, are food-focused pubs. But, you know, the Lockhart's got a strong wet offer. How are you going to manage those customers that just, like me, for example, that just wants to pop in for a drink?
Well, you won't be allowed.
No, I'm barred.
Yeah, we need to make money. We don't want you sitting there having your shandies.
Telling everyone who you are and what magazine you run and all that again. You know who I am. It's too much.
Every time.
We're still getting a head around it, Ed. What you don't want to do is become, you know, you don't want to take, what you see is we got quite a few customers that come in for a drink, quite elderly, some of them, and it's really part of their social fabric. So you don't want to chase those away, but you have to find a balance somewhere where, you know, I haven't checked recently, but we're not a registered charity. So you have to find a balance between making a few quid and keeping people happy. And it might take us a couple of weeks to get our head around that.
That's a difficult one, isn't it? Because, I mean, joking aside, I mean, you say we're not the registered charity, you're not, but what are the cards that we've played as an industry is actually that charitable element, that we are, you know, somewhere for people who need to go for loneliness, you know, for inclusion within the community and all the rest of it.
It's just you, Ed.
But we are also businesses. So that's going to be a difficult one to square, isn't it? Because if you're a sort of traditional sort of, you know, pub that very much makes that, but you can't just have, you know, old Dave sat at a table for 4 hours nursing a half. Much as you love it, and it gets him out the home and out from under his wife's feet, or, you know, whatever. I'm being hugely sexist with this, I just realised it's terrible. But it is that those kind of customers are going to be difficult.
But just for a second, think about it, right? You're talking about the 17th of May like it's all back to normal. You're under Tier 1 restrictions.
I was talking June, actually. I was talking about June. But, yeah. I'm not even talking about that, Heath. I'm talking about when you can open even, you know, the outside space, or, you know, all these things. You know, it's managing that customer expectation of those that kind of go, yeah, okay, I'm going to go out for a meal, because this is what you want, isn't it? You basically want every customer coming to your food orientated pubs going, I'm coming out for a slap up meal with five of my mates, or whatever the restriction is. I'm going to sit down, I'm going to have three courses, I'm going to smash a load of wine, beer, whatever, and then be gone in 2 hours.
I've got it.
That's your ideal customer.
I've got it. So what we do now is you get your vaccine passport, and then we do a credit check. We means test them. And then only when they've gone through those two checks can they come in. I think you're bang on right, Ed.
How do you do
I think
that?
When we're come June, you'll have that sort of tapestry of different customers, some and some. You can't become exclusive. The pub's about being inclusive. But I would forgive pubs that have been part of pubs raising 100 million for charity every year to just look after themselves for a little while. I got a request this morning, and it's something we would do. It's like, we're having a tombola. Could you donate a prize? I'm like, what would you want?
The comedy is rather bare.
Yes, a signed rent demand. You know, it felt terrible, but honestly, it's like, have a little sympathy, you know.
That's the lack of empathy or total ignorance, as much as Sophie with Heath's current favourite customer as well. What have we learned, would you say, about customers during lockdown?
We haven't missed them, really. Other than fiscally, we've not missed them at all. Next question.
No. I think we need to dig into that. Have you learned anything?
How much they love the pub, how much it forms part of their life.
Yeah.
For many of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, what I've learned is the ones, the real, like, you know, especially for takeaway food at the Red Lion, who our real supporters are. We've got people who are ordering 3-4 times a week with us. Great supporters. So you really want to look after them when you reopen as well. Mm. You know what I mean? Those people who have been through the last year with you and really made sure you're surviving. You know what I mean? I want to make sure they get tables when we open. You know, I just don't want to be a free-for-all. I want to look after the people who have looked after us.
I mean, particularly that guy that was after a discount as well. I mean, that's great support, isn't it?
Mentioning their names.
Yeah, I can't mention
it. Did you say discount?
Discount, yes.
What are you swearing for, man? There's nothing to swear. There's no discounting going on here, mate.
Now, we've had the same down here. There are many customers. It's almost that every Friday night, you know, they constantly become part of their week, which is great. Yeah. But I think also I don't know if you saw it was in Brooklyn, I think, this week. Was it that, you know, Eater podcast? They were talking about one of their customers had phoned through and just placed an order for food, but it wasn't for them. They just supported the restaurant. It became viral, where other people were phoning up and maybe ordering stuff for the staff or for the next person walking in. It became a really kind of nice vibe about it. But I think it's been humbling to see and talk to people as they go by. And there's always something to say.
But the ones who get it, there's customers who get that. They're going, oh my God, we realise how difficult it is. Then I've got customers ringing up going, the spring roll lady. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like Chinese, we did a Chinese New Year menu. We went out, we did a totally off menu, something we never normally do. I love Chinese food, so I've got a pretty good understanding. And I used to own a Chinese restaurant years ago. So that's another story. But I understand Chinese food quite well. So we did a Chinese New Year menu. So we go all in and spring rolls, right? If you're going to make spring rolls fresh, most Chinese restaurants will make them and they'll freeze them or they'll buy them in. We were making them fresh that day. Now, there's a bit of a problem sometimes with that because the liquid can, well, the liquid can seep into the pastry and then it can explode out. So we took an order off, like, took an order off a lady, 200 quid order, big order for Chinese New Year. I can pack it all up, you know, amazing, blah, blah. I was doing dumplings, so I missed what was going on in one section. So their food went out. She drove up here from her house after dinner with one spring roll in her hand to show us that one of the spring rolls had blown out, you know, it's a bit of an explosion on it, and how disappointed she was, and this is not the standard she expects from us. She finished all her other food. There was nothing wrong. The other food was lovely. She drove from her house to us to complain about a spring roll.
Was it just one spring roll?
It was one spring roll out of three. She had three spring rolls. One of them had a bit of a problem.
Well, I mean, that's not good enough.
She drove here to complain.
Was it Sophie?
No, it wasn't Sophie. But seriously, fuck off. You're not supporting it.
Is that what you said to her? Or did you give her? Did you take money off the
house? Then we refunded the cost of that spring roll set. So we gave her a 6 quid back. Do you know what I mean? Really? Okay. And it's one, these are one of these people who go, it's not about the money, it's about the principle. You know what the principle is? You're not supporting us, you're busting our heads, you're over here making it more difficult, and you sit there at the end of the night, really hard service, and you're going, oh, thank you, this is what tonight's meant to you. A spring roll. Fuck off, Tracy, whatever your name was. Do you know what I mean?
I'll tell you what.
What about, like, guys, what an amazing meal. You've gone out of your way, you've cooked food you normally don't. 99% of the customers were so happy texting us, what an amazing experience, we're so happy, you put gift vouchers in some of the meals, you had lanterns, you had, you know, you really went out overboard on it. But all I'm going to take away from that one night is this lady and her spring roll.
You do well. I mean? I don't know how you don't let it affect you.
No, it just washes over him, doesn't it? But I mean, the thing is, what we've learned from that anecdote is that Heath is shit at making spring rolls.
Mm-hmm.
That's
but you know what I mean. But I've got people that rang up the other night. You know, I just thought it could be a bit better. Here's the problem. You
thought
about something, didn't you?
I think about that all the time.
You thought about it. You know what I mean? It's just like your expectations. Like, people are so frustrated. They want to. What they really should do is go and put a bucket on their head and go in the garden and scream. Don't ring me up and complain about bullshit. Because I know you're unhappy. We're unhappy.
I think, I mean, to be fair, you tend to have more of these stories than most people. I don't know whether it's
the kind of
customers that you attract or that we keep sending to. I don't know if there's any...
honestly, I'm a magnet. Like, it just... I get these people. I don't know where they come from. They just come to bother me.
South London, you know what I mean? My bike.
And on that note, let's move on.
Fucking spring roll, man. Honestly.
You are listening to the Lock In podcast with myself, Ed Bennington, James Cuthbertson, and Heath Ball. Please don't forget to like, subscribe, and share using the links on the homepage. We're talking about reopening following the announcements of the roadmap, the delightful roadmap that was announced earlier this week. Let's look at some of the costs of that. I mean, from your point of view, guys, I mean, what are the costs of reopening? Because, I mean, the costs of closing, and we've been through that. It's not cheap. It's not easy. I mean, what are you anticipating? What are going to be the biggest kind of challenges of getting back up, refiring the business back up?
Go, Heath.
Stocking back up, get all your kitchens, especially up here, the kitchens, getting all the food. I suppose we're already there at both sites because we're already doing takeaway, but it's getting your staff back, I suppose, is a big cost, getting them all trained, you know, back into the groove and working. You can't just, you know, if we can open on the 12th, you can't expect them to just drop them in on the 12th and go, okay, welcome back after, you know, how many months off at home watching Netflix. So, you know, you're going to need some training, so that's going to be a cost. But I think, you know, getting stock back up and ready to go, and then also the fear that the government could change their mind the next day. So, you know, well, I suppose just getting stocked up, ready to go is going to be the cost. You know, getting beer in the cellar, you know.
I mean,
you got beer in the cellar.
Previously, we got bugger all notice, didn't we? It was literally kind of waiting. And then, was it a week? Something like that. I mean, at least now, we may have a little bit more notice, depending on this, whether they change their minds or not. I mean, that's a better thing, do you think? Is that going to allow you to plan a bit more?
Yeah, but as Heath says, you just don't know. We're just done with the rug to get pulled from under you. And what to expect. We're still not clear on what we actually need to do to our sites to make them compliant. There's a lot of detail missing there. Mm. And that detail instantly impacts how you set your site up. Numbers in your garden, for example. So
yeah.
I think we're a long way from even understanding what those costs can be yet. But if you look at it, and if you've got, like here, you've got, you know, garden represents about a quarter of our capacity, say, or a third. So then you've got to look at your beer stock, for example, your real ales. What can you really put on? Can you really go back and go all singing or dancing, six on the front, cask, and, you know, 10 keg? Not really. You know, if you want to serve great beer in great nick. So you then have to, you know, make some concessions, unfortunately. So they might not come back to the pub they necessarily were used to. And the menu, you're going to have to look at that again. Can you run the same menu? I think one of the biggest dangers here is that we reopen and at the end of April the furlough falls away, and then you are actually saying to guys, there's no job, we cannot sponsor you, it's just not there anymore. And then you run from the end of April to the grand reopening on the 21st or whenever it ends up being, and those guys don't have jobs and they don't have furlough. So again, we can wait to that. Your point, can we wait to the budget? Well, it's a week away. Yeah, we can wait to the budget, but it needs to contain a lot of detail. And I'd like to think that some of the most impacted industries, like travel, tourism and hospitality, get their own time in this budget for some detailed answers, not broad brush sweeping statements. It was interesting last night that the grants, initially the contact that we have that was on the pod a few weeks ago, Kevin had said they thought that they would end up pushing the grants out next week along with the budget, but actually last night they accelerated that, and I think they'll get paid pretty quickly now,
right?
Which will be the grants from the 15th of February through to the end of March.
Right.
So I said to you last night, that's mental, because, you know, we just got that email through from Haringey, and they're just processing the grants from November last year.
Yeah,
that's Haringey. Seriously. Yeah, like, what do they want? No pubs or hospitality in Haringey anymore. You know, for years I've been bitching about late licences and bars and pubs. Well, there we go, Haringey. You're going to have nothing. Well, not Haringey, Hackney. You're going to have nothing left, Hackney. It's all going to be gone.
And you think you might get an answer.
Pay the grants.
You think you might get an answer quickly on whether you can use the outside space in Hackney. You'll know in about 5 years' time.
maybe just open it and go, I sent you guys an email, didn't you?
Yeah. Obviously just, not. You didn't get that. I just assumed it was fine.
Yeah.
You know, but they didn't say no. So, I mean... What are you expecting from the budget? I mean, what would you like to hear in terms of support? And I fear for you, James, that you're expecting detail from this government when detail has
I'm expecting
not its strongest suit.
I'm expecting an extension of the VAT cut. I'm expecting the rates to be, or want the rates to give us another year on rates. Extend furlough.
Well, I think, you know, just on rates, I think it'd be nice if they said, we're going to give you another year, but in that year, we're also going to look at reassessing the way we do rates.
Yeah.
And we're going to restructure it. You know what I mean? Because they can't just flick us back to going, well, here's your rates bill. They need to seriously re-look at the way it's done.
Overdue for reform. Hugely overdue for reform. But, you know, they've had plenty of opportunity to do this, and they haven't yet. So, I mean, are we sort of whistling into the dark for that?
Maybe. We also need the extension of furlough till the 21st of June.
Yeah.
I mean, that would make sense. And we're going to need another cycle of grants. No, I'd like another cycle of grants. You know, what we need and what we're going to get are different things. But I think if you gave the industry that package of VAT rates, I mean, not just our industry, another set of grants, extension of furlough, we'd get through that, you know?
Mm.
That would seem to be fair to me.
I mean, particularly, you're talking 3 months potentially sort of diminished, if nothing, income. It's there's got to be something.
And I think at the end of it, I mean, that's what I was saying, you could expect, you know, a very detailed budget to run for some time and to give us some proper detail. And at the end of it, tell us how you're going to get the money back, because we're not stupid. We know we need to get it back. Mm. But let's be part of that solution, understand how it's going to be. I'm asking for a grown-up approach to this, so we probably won't get it.
No. I mean, also the support you're expecting, I mean, is that going to vary depending on whether you open or not? I mean, this is the thing. I mean, if you're going to open and trade and they're going to penalise you for that, based on,
they should trade. But they're going to make their money anyway. They're going to make their money on the VAT, even though it's 5% on food, 20% on drink. They're still making income. Do you know what I mean? So if you can't, they should let us open. That you should still get grants and stuff if you can open. Mm. I think it's, you know, I think help us all dig ourselves out of a hole. Do you know what I mean?
And I mean, the other issue as well is if you're opening and trying to manage that process with only outside only, you've got all sorts of challenges with staffing levels. You know, if you open outside, it rains, you're stuck with no customers and lots of staff. I mean, how do you handle that? Can you handle that? Or is it just a case of suck it and see and suck it up?
If furlough's still in place, then you just, you know, whatever hours they work that week, you send them home and they're on part-time furlough. So you can offset them against furlough. Do you know what I mean? Okay, you work 30 hours this week, we had you down for 40, the other 10 will be furlough payment.
Right.
Mm. If they extend it, yeah.
That's why it's crucial for them to extend.
But that's why it's crucial. Yeah. They can't give us, even though, you know, problems with the support they've given us so far, but they can't support us all this way and then at the end go, good luck.
And also,
Heath, to be fair, I mean, that's kind of what they've done, haven't they? It was at the start, lots and lots of support, and then slowly, as it's gone on, kind of gone, yeah, you know what, on
but
your own, lads.
But also, tell me a pub that thinks they can trade well, properly, organised, and without interruption, in a garden without a marquee or covering. You can't, how do you even think about planning for that? So there's a cost there, and they're not cheap.
No.
You know? And then, honestly, they're probably virtually out indoor spaces outside, so we're pissing in the wind anyway.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, how do we know? I mean, and that depends on your licensing guys locally, the council.
Yeah, they've got a formula they work on for marquees, and it's how many sides are exposed.
So what about yours then, guys? Because you've got pretty much a fully enclosed garden at the
I have no idea what you're talking about. Thanks, mate. Good speaking to you.
It's a really bad line, Heath. I think we're going to have to call it a day.
What was that?
I've lost you.
Remember to follow, subscribe and share with your friends.
Listen, our three listeners need to know this. I mean, so ostrich approach, is that what you're saying?
Sorry, I can't hear me. It's on the sound. So what's the next section?
Ignore it and hope for the best. Ignore it.
Here's the way I look at it, right? Yeah, you could probably look at what we've done and go, it's not really outside, is it? Because you've got walls and stuff. But this is the way I look at it. I'm trying to stay in business, or we're trying to stay in business. So,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You've got to do whatever you can to stay in business, because we know this government doesn't care if you go out of business. So if they come along and they said, we're not happy with that site, that wall there, you know, can you take that down? You take it down, but I'd rather ask for forgiveness than ask for permission. So yeah. I think that's where we're at. Like, this is it. We're doing whatever we can to survive.
Mm. Yeah. And there's probably a degree of leniency. You can, like you say, it is. You will get a degree of leeway in terms of...
Yeah.
Depends where you are and the attitudes, but... Challenging times.
Right, let's stop talking about a marquee.
But it's a lovely marquee, James. It's thoroughly illegal, but... anyway, moving on. You are listening to the Lock In podcast, and we are almost at the end of this week's episode. Let's just have a little bit of a chat. You know, we've got the roadmap. Potentially, we have some light at the end of the tunnel. grim though it might be, we're almost out of the woods in some ways. What do we think are going to be the long-term scars for you guys and for the sector from COVID?
Heath?
I love the way he does that when he doesn't actually know what he wants to say. He just passes it straight to you, Heath.
I don't know. I think we're all going to be carrying debt. I think debt's going to be an issue. I think that's probably going to be the biggest issue, trying to dig yourself out of this. If you've got through it and you've taken on debt, you've still got to pay it back. I think it's going to be a mess for a while. I think, your back of house is going to be a headache, being compliant. I don't know, staff. I don't know. There's some positives, maybe, but I don't know. I just think, what state when we get to reopen, or what's it going to look like a year down the road? Are we just going to get taxed to hell next year? And so, I think it's just going to be, we're just going to be battle worn for a while. I think we're just going to, unless the government really starts understanding our business, which we know they don't, we're always going to be penalised. And I think, we'll get some tax breaks hopefully next week in the budget. But then I think next year I could just see them coming in hard. Wham, 25% VAT on food, 30% on drink,
They've got to get the money back somehow. So it might be the effect of, having less disposable income in our customers' pockets. And of course,
What we do that finally Rishi was talking about the other day, start taxing online shopping.
Was that with Gordon?
Amazon paid £14 million in corporation tax last year on £20 billion turnover. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Come on.
Yeah.
Just put a penny or something on every pound or something. Yeah. But, get it back that way. Stop destroying the high street and pubs. There's going to be no high street left.
I mean, that's going to be an interesting thing, isn't it? I mean, the high street is going to be changed beyond all recognition, and we were talking about this before this crisis came in, about how the high street was drying up, and how hospitality actually needed to be brought back into the mix of regeneration. Yeah. So maybe a legacy of this is actually that regeneration is genuinely going to be a hospitality led one, where we see these empty sites being snapped up by savvy operators who see the opportunity to reassess reset that kind of that ridiculous chase in the market that we had from the casual dining thing. We may see those sites let at sensible.
Well, yeah, terms. Hopefully we get some really. Hopefully we get a new breed of young entrepreneurs who may be able to pick up sites that were ex clothing shops or something and do some really interesting, cool stuff with it. You know what I mean? And there's some tax breaks for being creative, and we really light up the hospitality scene in this country, and really, like a phoenix out of the fire. We come up and it's just amazing, and we have this regrowth, and we get like the roaring 20s, and it's all amazing, Hopefully we get a bit of that.
That would be brilliant. I mean, do you think young entrepreneurs are going to be put off from this sector?
I think this industry is built by people who love what they do and they have a passion for food and drink. And I think the government know that. That's why they know if one operator goes out of business, there's always someone waiting there with their life savings to go and do something they've always wanted to do, or borrow family money. So I think the government prey on the fact that we all love what we do. And therefore, if I go out of business, there'll always be someone ready to take the pub on who's got a dream. Everybody dreams big in this business. I want to own loads of pubs and sell them, or I want to do a drinks brand and sell. And everyone's got, super creative. So, yeah, I think there will be loads of, I think we'll see some really interesting stuff come. And I think we'll see, a lot of creative sort of ideas and, maybe, losing some of the, traditional operations. We'll see us have some really interesting stuff. And hopefully we'll, have a resurgence in the industry, some real creative stuff.
A chance to reset.
Yeah.
Definitely. Landlords aren't going to get what they've wanted to get for years. Suddenly it's like the Jamie Olivers coming in and going, I want 200 sites, we're going to pay you over the odds for this site. That's gone now. These landlords are going to have to realise they can't do that. And we're going to get a reset there,
I think, what are we most looking forward to about getting pubs back up and running? As operators and punters ourselves.
I'm looking forward to just finally getting back on our feet, having, a sensible take, and then cancer research launching sober summer. right? Sober summer. And then, right? And then people also remembering again that they have food allergies and tolerances that they didn't have in lockdown. And bringing them to the pub to explore and hack menus. That's what I'm really looking forward to, Ed.
Not the cynical in any way. Less cynicism about the fuck am I talking about?
I tell you, everyone out there knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to being able to go somewhere on holiday, like San Sebastian, or say that, and just sit in the bar and not have any bloody worries and no one, you know, no stress. Or I just want to go and sit in a pub and have a pint of Guinness and just be a punter and just sit there and have a pint.
Other stouts
with no bullshit going on and no one telling me to use sanitizer and wear a mask and the one-way system's that way and the other-way system's that way and you've got to do this. I just want to be in a pub, even if it's a Witherspoons, God forbid, even if it's a Witherspoons and I'm in there and some guy's spitting on the floor. I just want to be somewhere like that. Do you know what I mean? I want to go to the dirtiest, crustiest pub in the country and sit there and drink beer for dirty lines and get hurled abuse from the landlord. That's what I want.
But enough about the Wenlock Arms. Let's.
That's not bad for you, Ed.
That's all right, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I thought it was quite quick, didn't it? Yeah. I mean, I must admit, I share that. I think I'm looking forward to just being able to just go and have a beer. Ideally on the 12th of April, that Heath has penciled in for me at 2 o'clock, and I'll sit there for 4 hours nursing a half. But
mate, Ed, with your physique, we can tell you don't drink carbs, mate.
I'm a slimline tonic and gin man myself.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. I mean,
between pints.
Just as long as it's not on TV.
It's called a palate cleanser, Heath. Palate cleanser. Anyway, I mean, of course, with all the news about reopening pubs eventually being allowed back to trade, the burning question that we've all been really dying to know, Heath, is what's this mean for the crepery?
Oh, man, I'm so done making crepes.
Death to the crepery.
I'm so done. I never want to see another crepe in my life.
You love
them. I've got staff, and I'm going to have to check their BMI before they started working on the crepe stand, and their BMI after, and I'm going to charge them money for every point they put on, because I'm pretty sure we're selling like 5, and the staff are eating 100. But the crepe machine's going. I'm going to hide those in the cellar. I'll probably do a pancake day one day. But I've had enough of crepes.
They're making them and going, yeah, oh no, that one hasn't worked. I'll eat that.
No, seriously. I went at one of them, Parlo, the other day, they ate 5 crepes. Five. Do you know what I mean? I'm just watching him get bigger and bigger every day. He'll sue me. He'll end up suing me because he's put on weight at work. It'll be my fault.
Well, and on that note, let's bring this episode to a close. Please do subscribe, like, share, all that kind of stuff. We will be back next week talking all things pubs. But in the meantime, stay safe.
Spring roll!